sex, religion, politics. Taboo conversation topics historically and as far as etiquette dictates, and understandably so. We know these are provocative and potentially divisive topics, and most of us wouldn't mention these things as any part of idle chit-chat. But they're important topics. For most of us, what we think about these things form the basis for some of the most important decisions we make about how we live our lives. Is it okay to have sex without being married? Is it okay to have sex with someone of the same gender? Or are those things sin? Does hell exist? And if so, are there things we do in this life that might cause us to go to hell when we die? And if there are, should we make those things illegal? Given their importance, it would make sense for us to discuss these things all the time. And indeed, with the advent of social media, we now find that the taboo around these topics is suddenly softened. On Twitter and Facebook, people share all the time, sharing news articles and opinion pieces about political issues, inspirational stories, quotes, and practices that highlight spiritual and religious beliefs, and videos, quotes, and articles that demonstrate whether or not the poster thinks it's okay to be lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, genderqueer, questioning, or whether or not they think things like abortion should be legal. In the sudden removal of social barriers around these issues, sex, religion, and politics, we are in danger of conflating them. And there's a way in which they do tend to go together. If you know that someone is politically conservative, then you probably have a pretty good guess about some aspects of their spiritual or religious life, and you also likely have a good guess of where they stand on social issues like abortion and LGBTQ rights. The same is true if you know someone is politically liberal. But why is that? Why do these three things go together? And in particular, why is it that some aspects of our personal lives, like whether or not gay marriage should be legal, why and how has that become a political issue and such a provocative one? I can certainly understand that it's a religious issue, as differing faiths have different stances on who can get married. But that's a religious matter. As a clergy person, I am not required by law to officiate at any wedding that I do not approve of, and I can disapprove for any reason. No religious denomination can be forced to change its beliefs or teachings, and no clergy person can be forced to offer services that he or she disagrees with. Religious liberals, that's what we are, overlap heavily with political liberals, who overlap heavily with social liberals. Religious conservatives overlap heavily with political conservatives, who overlap heavily with social conservatives. These terms I'm using, liberal and conservative, are tied to philosophical and ideological systems. And I'm not someone who has studied ideologies, and I'm not doing an in-depth analysis of them here. So I'm using liberal and conservative in the way that most of us understand and use them every day, conventional understandings. And to the extent that I'm going deeper with them, I'll tell you what I'm doing and what I'm talking about. So let me start with this, because I'm assuming we don't all think about these things all the time, but we're religious liberals, not religious conservatives. And here we're going to make that distinction as religious liberals and religious fundamentalists. As religious liberals, we believe that truth is still being revealed and discovered. Many of us find truth in the revelations of science, of poetry, of music, and truth even from our own insights and self-reflection. As our friends in the United Church of Christ affirm, God is still speaking for those of us who believe in God. The idea that Revelation is still unfolding stands in opposition to religious fundamentalism, which asserts that truth has been revealed in sacred texts like the Hebrew Bible, the Christian Bible, and the Quran, and that our understanding of these texts is fixed and unchanging. For religious fundamentalists, there is theological difficulty in trying to make sense of things like gay marriage, transgender rights, and reproductive freedom, because these things were not norms when those sacred texts were written. They've told themselves that those texts are the word of God or God's prophets, and then they're stuck in the inflexibility of those texts. We who aren't hung up on making sense of ancient texts aren't stuck in the same way. So that's the difference between religious liberals and religious fundamentalists. Social conservatism is harder to define. It's generally understood as focusing on the preservation of what are considered traditional values. We know that phrase, and that's pretty vague. We know what it means here in the United States, but it's difficult to define it more clearly than that. We know what's meant by traditional values, except to itemize the positions we communally understand to be involved: disdain for LGBTQ people, a desire to restrict women's reproductive choices. I'm tempted to say that social conservatism is simply an ideology that hearkens to the norms of the past, but the question immediately becomes, which past? Abortion was legalized over 40 years ago, but it's still being debated. So maybe this is why we see such an overlap between religious fundamentalism and social conservatism. And let me be clear, I'm talking about an overlap, but not 100% overlap. You can be religiously liberal and have socially conservative opinions. What will make you different from many social conservatives is that the reasoning behind your opinion is likely different from those of a religious fundamentalist. For religious fundamentalists, authority comes from those religious texts, not from science, not from personal reflection. When you believe that all truth is contained in texts that were written centuries ago, and those ancient texts, of course, reflect the norms of those ancient times, then it's going to be hard for you to make room for modern understandings of homosexuality and reproductive choice in your set of opinions. In the same way that religious fundamentalists are stuck with what their religious texts say, they can also be stuck in a different time period when it comes to social norms. When we hear the phrase traditional values, we always hope they mean traditional values like loving your neighbor and being kind to one another. But conventionally, they tend to mean traditional values like heterosexual marriage and the subjugation of women and people of color. Social liberalism takes an opposing view on these issues. LGBTQ people are A-okay, just the way they are. Reproductive choices are good, and so on. An opinion piece from newsman Robert Leonard in the New York Times this week described the difference between liberals and conservatives this way: that liberals believe people are inherently good, and conservatives believe people are inherently bad. So I think this is an interesting way to think of thinking about positions on social issues. I'm sure it's not universally true, but it's interesting to me. Social conservatives may believe that people, inherently bad and prone to making dangerous decisions, need to be compelled through social pressure, and in some cases, the law, to make the right decisions. Social liberals may believe, for the most part, that people can make good decisions on their own. So you can see how these beliefs are grounded in theology. People are inherently good or inherently bad. You can have an opinion about that without attending church, but certainly those of us in this room know where we fall. Our first principle is to affirm and promote the inherent worth and dignity of every person. So then we get to politics, the role of the government in ensuring a healthy and productive society. The difference between political liberals and political conservatives is actually hard to articulate. This is my attempt. I'm sure we have, if we have 50 people in the room, 60 opinions. In general, political liberals advocate in favor of government involvement in our lives, particularly to protect civil liberties like freedom of speech and to ensure the equitable access of individuals to things like education, healthcare, and social welfare. Political conservatives have historically advocated for less government regulation and involvement in people's lives. I say historically because many political conservatives are also social conservatives, and so are comfortable with governmental intervention into social issues like women's reproductive choices, what kinds of marriage are legal and not legal, and so on. So those values about government involvement are a little bit in conflict there. You hear, I hope, that although there is tremendous overlap between religious liberals, social liberals, and political liberals, that although we are surely a room full of religious liberals, we could have social liberals and conservatives here. We could have political liberals and conservatives here. To be religiously liberal does not mean that anyone is automatically socially or politically liberal. So much of the passion and divisiveness in our culture right now is around social issues. Should gay marriage remain legal? Should abortion remain legal? Should the death penalty be legal? Should terminally ill patients be able to choose when and how they die? Should sex education be taught in public schools? If we all agreed on those things, and of course we don't, but if we did, the question of how big government should be and what kinds of issues it should oversee would likely feel a lot less volatile. You will be walking some night in the comfortable dark of your yard, and suddenly a great light will shine round about you, and behind you will be a wall you never saw before. It will be clear to you suddenly that you were about to escape and that you are guilty. You misread the complex instructions. You are not a member. You lost your card or never had one. Social issues are so provocative and divisive because they are issues that affect our lives. When we talk about abortion, I think about my ability to have an abortion if I want one. When we talk about gay marriage, we are talking about our marriage if we're gay or lesbian, or we're talking about the marriage of people we know and love. When we talk about the death penalty, we're talking about crimes that would devastate any of us. And we're talking about the punishment for those devastating crimes. These issues feel personal because they are personal. And for many of us, these are the issues that have divided us at times from friends and from family. Because no matter how secure we are in our own choices and our own lives, we know what the traditional values are. We know how we don't conform, how we don't fit in. And you will know that they have been there all along, their eyes on your letters and books, their hands in your pockets, their ears wired to your bed. Though you have done nothing shameful, they will want you to be ashamed. They will want you to kneel and weep and say that you should have been like them. As strong as our desire for authenticity, to live our lives in the fullness of who we really are, so too can be our desire to conform. We want to fit in. For many of us, the feeling of our country being divided is almost unbearable. The deep longing for community, for connection, we hold that deep longing in tension with the desire to express our most authentic selves. What if we speak our truths and are rejected? How many of us have lost friendships or family connections because we chose whatever it is we chose? We chose to be ourselves. We, none of us here, have lived our lives without risking rejection from communities we would have accept us. And once you say you are ashamed, reading the page they hold out to you, then such light as you have made in your history will leave you. They will no longer need to pursue you. You will pursue them, begging forgiveness. They will not forgive you. There is no power against them. You will be heartened, I hope, to know or recall that comprehensive body positive sex education has been part of Unitarian Universalist religious education programs for the past 40 years. The curriculum is now called Our Whole Lives, or OWL. There are separate and distinct OWL curricula for each of 6 age groups, beginning in kindergarten and ending with adults. The core values of the OWL curricula are self-worth, sexual health, responsibility, and justice and inclusivity. In conjunction with First UU Church of San Diego, we are offering OWL classes this year for our 5th and 6th graders, beginning in February and concluding in April. After today, perhaps you might think about the connection between sex education and liberal religion in a new and deeper way. It is only candor that is aloof from them, only an inward clarity, unashamed, that they cannot reach. Be ready. When their light has picked you out and their questions are asked, say to them, "I am not ashamed." A sure horizon will come around you. The heron will begin his evening flight from the hilltop. This morning, I invite you to feel the fullness of gratitude that although it is risky, you have chosen this path. We know that revelation is not sealed, that there is beauty and wonder and truth to be found in the sunrise, in coffee with a friend, even the latest New York Times bestseller. We can appreciate the relevant teachings from many religious texts, and we can set aside what doesn't make sense anymore. We are not stuck. We are free to explore what we find interesting and curious, no idea too threatening, no choice forbidden. Our values are love and hope and reason and freedom. May these values help us to overcome all that divide us, and may our works of love help heal all that is broken in this world. Amen.